Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack joins us this week for a discussion on USDA's 2023 work and a look back at the COP28 climate conference. But first, here's this week's headlines. Grocery prices were up slightly last month, but the latest consumer price index shows inflation is slowing. Food at home prices were 0.1% higher in November and are 1.7% higher over the previous year. That's the lowest 12-month increase since June 2021, according to the White House Council of Economic Advisors. The overall CPI was also up 0.1% on higher housing costs. New congressional recommendations call for raising tariffs on Chinese exports and protecting American farmers from anticipated trade retaliation. The House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party rolled out the suggestions in a report Tuesday as part of a plan to reset the economic relationship between the two countries. The report says the U.S. Trade Representative must find new markets for American ag exports and that Congress should look to soften the blow if China retaliates. And finally, dozens of American agriculture, government, and industry officials took part in the COP28 climate conference in Dubai. Americans in attendance argued farmers can mitigate greenhouse gas emissions without sacrificing productivity. Among the attendees reporting a change in the conversation was Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, who said the script has been flipped for American agriculture, and he hopes to keep it that way.
Well, I think the progress of the Aim for Climate is an indication of the work the United States has done in providing leadership. Focused on innovation, focused on sustainable productivity, more partners, more opportunities for innovation to be identified and to be supported. I think that's one way. Secondly, the work that we're undertaking with our Climate Smart Commodity Partnership Initiative is really leading the world in terms of agriculture and adopting sustainable practices. And to the extent that we can report, as we will, on an ongoing basis, the important work that's being done in those partnerships, I think that's going to reflect positively on American agriculture and its commitment to sustainable regenerative practices that will result in reduced greenhouse gas emissions, more carbon sequestered, and a better story for agriculture generally, certainly in this country and around the world.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Aim for Climate initiative, and of course, big announcements on that front at COP28. I wonder, looking forward, where does Aim for Climate go from here?
It just continues to grow. The goal here, I think, is for us to continue to encourage more countries, more partners, more nonprofits, more businesses to participate, and more innovations to be identified and accelerated. The good news was that as a result of a partnership between the UAE and the Gates Foundation, now in addition to the Aim for Climate resources, we also have resources to essentially scale up the innovations that are being identified through the Aim for Climate effort. So now we have additional opportunities to encourage people to participate and to be part of this.
Mm-hmm. I want to zoom out just quickly before we get to some other subjects, but zoom out quickly on just the climate conversation globally in general. What do you think increased global attention on climate change mitigation means for the American agricultural producer?
Well, I think it means an opportunity for us to educate about American leadership in agriculture and mitigation. I think farmers and ranchers and producers across the country are already embracing a number of practices. We've identified nearly 200 practices that farms and ranches are currently engaging in that would be, I think, considered a climate smart. And to the extent that we can highlight, to the extent that we can lift up the work of American agriculture, I think it provides not only a pat on the back here at home, but also a recognition that there are many ways to go about climate smart activities. One way is through a voluntary incentive-based market-driven system, which is what we've adopted here in the U.S. And I think the rest of the world is watching and anxious to see whether this is a model that ought to be replicated around the world.
We'll have more from Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. we have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. In light of new recommendations from Capitol Hill on the U.S.-China relationship, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says Congress needs to be cautious with its approach.
Obviously, China is our number one market. And I think part of what we're trying to do at USDA is to make sure that we're in the best possible negotiating position with China by diversifying our trade opportunities and options in the Indo-Pacific area, in Central America, South America, and other parts of the world. I think we have been over dependent on one market, as large as it is. And obviously, we set a record in sales to China last year, and we're continuing to sell product today. They need it. They want it. They have to have it. And they're somewhat dependent on us. At the same time, you just can't put too many eggs in one basket. Because when you do, and we saw this during the tariff situation, it devastated American agriculture and caused the government to have to spend a substantial amount of money to make up for the lost income that farmers experienced because of the tariffs. So I don't think we want to go back there.
I want to wrap up our conversation talking about some of the things that USDA has been doing here in 2023. One of those things was rolling out the Emergency Relief Program and that assistance for producers authorized at the tail end of 22 by Congress. But we have seen some feedback from Congress that they'd like some changes made to the program. Some farm groups are expressing a little concern there. I guess I still have that to ask you. Does USDA have any changes in the works or in the cards for ERP?
This is a really irritating conversation. Because the problem is with Congress. The 2021 package of assistance was roughly $10 billion, which was equal to the losses that we had calculated during those 2 years. So it was relatively easy to provide full and complete relief to everyone. So in 2022, we advised Congress that the range of damage was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 to $12 billion. So one would have expected that that's what Congress would have done as they had done in the past. That's not what Congress did. They gave us 27% of that amount, 27%. And then they expressed surprise that farmers aren't getting what they got the previous year. Well, of course, when you only have 27% of what you had the previous year, you're obviously going to have to make adjustments. Then the question is, how do you adjust it in a way to help farmers who need the help the most? And what we did is we made slight adjustments. And so of the 220-some thousand farmers that received assistance, 180,000 of them received more money than they would have received if we had applied the same process that we applied when we were fully funded. So if Congress wants to basically ensure full funding, then all they've got to do is appropriate the money for full funding.
Mm-hmm. Wrapping up on some other subjects, obviously you and I could talk for not exaggerating, probably for days about the work at the department by you and others that work there. But I suppose if we were to kind of look at the high points, I mean, what do you think has been the highlight of the work of the department here in 2023?
Well, I think it's a continuation of records in one sense, record income and record exports. And it's also a recognition that a lot of the income that's generated in agriculture has been concentrated in large scale production agriculture, and that we need to do a better job within the country supporting agriculture at all levels, both small and mid-sized operators. And what we've been able to do at USDA is to create an entrepreneurial framework of new income opportunities for these small and mid-sized producers. Whether it's the Climate Smart Partnership Initiative or opportunities for renewable energy to increase new income or the bioproduct, excited about the sustainable aviation fuel opportunity that I think farmers are going to have a benefit of, or expanding local and regional food systems. All of this is designed, in addition to more processing capacity, to create more opportunities for more income streams to come into those small and mid-sized producers so that we have better balance, if you will.
I've seen the remarks that you offer many times with the whiteboard behind you, you know, offering your thoughts, your vision on that new revenue system for American producers that you've described. What more does the department need to do? What work remains in your mind to more fully implement that vision and make it more available to a wider array of producers?
Well, I think just getting the message out, first of all, but we actually need a partner in Congress. We need a budget to ensure that we have adequate staff to make sure that these programs continue to be staffed. We need a farm bill, which will support many of the local and regional food system programs that are important and vital to the entrepreneurial framework we've announced. We need to, Congress not to interfere with the Inflation Reduction Act resources that are committed to conservation. This is a very important tool. We saw record levels of participation in conservation because of it, focused on climate smart practices. And so that's a way of continuing the momentum. We need to make sure that Congress also doesn't interfere with the resources for renewable energy production. The opportunity for RECs to convert and transition to renewable sources creates, I think, a tremendous income opportunity for farmers. And we need Congress to understand that it's important to have the flexibility to continue to use the Commodity Credit Corporation from time to time. As we have with the Climate Smart activities, as we have with some of the assistance that we've provided in terms of food banks and schools and the supply chain. There's absolutely momentum in this, and you're going to continue to see a lot more activity here in 2024 and beyond.
Plenty of activity in 23, plenty more, you say, in 24 going forward. Mr. Secretary, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Hannah Pagel shows us what farmers are getting from the price of food in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
American farmers are getting a declining share of the U.S. food dollar. This chart shows the amount of money farmers were making per dollar in 2022. You can see farmers received just under 15 cents of every dollar people spent on food, both at home and at restaurants. According to USDA, the remaining 85 or so pennies go toward what USDA calls the marketing share, which covers processing, transportation, packaging, and other aspects of the supply chain. The 2022 share is about 2% lower than the 2021 figure, but almost 11.5% lower than the 20-year average. One of the main factors in the drop in returns to farmers is more consumer dollars spent at restaurants and food service than at grocery stores. Farmers receive a smaller share of spending when people eat out compared to when food is purchased to eat at home. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. A lot of COP28 discussion in the news right now, and we're going to have more of it here in this week's panel. Joined for that conversation by Debbie Reed with the Ecosystem Services Market Consortium and Ernie Shea with Solutions from the Land. Appreciate both of you taking the time to join us and offer your experience from previous participations in various COPs around the world. And COP28 in particular, Debbie, it seems was known for, at least in American agriculture circles, as being recognized as a bit of a shift in the environment. I wonder, as you kind of assess the conversations that took place, what specifically do you think was different for American agriculture this time around?
I think there were two things, right, that that really led to the focus on agriculture. One was political expediency. The continued failure of the COPs to really address the underlying intensive or greenhouse gas intensive sectors of energy, fossil fuel, transportation, and buildings. And the fact that the COP was being held in an oil-producing state means it was highly unlikely that there would be a huge success to transition out of fossil fuel use. Second, however, is a technical necessity. because climate change is continuing unmitigated, we know that climate as a business done out, or agriculture as a business done outdoors, is in the crosshairs of climate change. So there's an absolute necessity for us to actually make food and ag systems more resilient to the climate change that we're seeing. Otherwise, right, if we cannot produce food for ourselves and all people and all nations, it doesn't matter what else we do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Debbie, you know, we talk so much about the impacts on American agriculture, and, you know, obviously that's, you know, where we all call home. But as we look around the rest of the world, how does global agriculture stand to react and adapt based on this new environment?
Well, so there's three agendas in the COP. One is political, one is technical and scientific, and then the third is financial. What we saw is at COP28, ag was firing on all three cylinders. All three of those agendas delivered significant commitments politically, technically, and financially to help transform food and ag systems across the world. So the U.S., we are one of the biggest producers, obviously, of food and agriculture in the world, and a lot of the rest of the world relies on that. But we need to make sure that in developing countries, and other countries in particular, that are feeling the impacts of climate change, that they are getting the financial, the technical, and other assistance to actually make their systems more resilient.
Ernie, bringing you into the fold here, you had the chance to actually be on site in Dubai and take part in the conversation. Wondering, you know, we talk so much about this new environment. Secretary Vilsack used the term that, American agriculture flipped the script at COP28 and was able to be a little bit more on offense as opposed to being on defense. What does American agriculture on offense mean in the terms of global climate change mitigation?
Solutions from the Land has been attending COP since 2009, and agriculture was typically, if it was on the agenda, was talked about as a problem. There wasn't very much focus at all on a solution. And now we're at the point where there's realization if the world is trying to stay below 1.5 degrees centigrade in terms of the global warming increase, they can't get there unless agriculture is participating. So I think that was important. But there was also a equally important outcome in that I think the world leaders are beginning to understand you can't just manage for climate outcomes. Agricultural landscapes deliver solutions to over half of the sustainable development goals. So you need to be thinking about concurrently managing these agricultural landscapes, not just for a climate outcome and benefit, but for food, nutrition, security, for water storage, for biodiversity, for economic development. They're all co-joined, and I think that was recognized at this COP.
We'll have more from our panel right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. Ernie Shea with Solutions from the Land says he appreciated much of the agricultural dialogue he saw at COP28, but he's also interested to see that change in mindset go forward.
Over the years that we've been going to the COP, there have not been many agricultural voices at the table, and we've been encouraging other, particularly grower groups, to participate and bring forward the actual facts around food and fiber production and ecosystem service delivery. There's a lot of competition in the COP, and when it comes to agriculture, there are many voices there that have a different message. Their message is agriculture is broken. We need to go back and undo information and technology advances and just adopt more simplistic farming systems. So we're there to demonstrate that thanks to innovation and technology, we can deliver not only a climate outcome, but the food and security that the world needs and other ecosystem services.
We've seen a lot of discussion recently in the last few years, really, about new innovations within climate change mitigation and agriculture, the Climate Smart Commodities Program at USDA, carbon credit trading. There's been quite a bit of movement on this front. I wonder, how do you think some of the discussions that took place at COP28 and some of those things that I just mentioned being discussed there as well, how do you think that ultimately shapes climate change mitigation investments that we can expect to see here in the United States?
Well, I think the first signal is that agriculture is a solution platform, and none of these individual programs will do it alone. We need to be thinking about multiple ways in which agriculture can deliver. So carbon markets, so carbon sequestration is a great example. But another is the renewable energy that we can produce across America through agricultural contributions. This COP made a very historic commitment with the goal of tripling renewable energy production by the year 2030. That is huge. So when you think about it, the agricultural landscapes in the United States, from biofuels to wind to solar power, we can be demonstrating that we can concurrently feed the world and deliver very important mitigation benefits. And it does take, it takes a public-private sector partnership.
Debbie, I want to wrap up the conversation with you and just kind of take a forward-looking approach here, wondering with the conference in Dubai now behind us, where do you think the ambitions laid out there go from here? What particularly are you going to be watching in this conversation?
It's a good question. What we'll be watching is whether or not the pledges and the commitments turn into actual financing, right? So there were a lot of money floating around, people saying, I pledge, I commit. We want to see that those commitments become real and translate into real money. That's the first thing. The second thing is we want to make sure that that money is being delivered through existing public-private partnerships. Ernie's entirely right. This has to be done collaboratively, leverage the public sector, the private sector. We need to see those commitments come through very quickly. We will be watching in the lead up to COP29 to see if, in fact, those pledges have come through, the assistance is getting through to farmers and ranchers on the ground. The Biden administration, Secretary Vilsack, have done tremendous amounts of work to do this. So there are mechanisms, public-private partnerships, ESMC is one of them, where we're seeing that delivery happening here, but it needs to happen globally.
Very good. Well, a number of conversations taking place in the aftermath of COP28 to keep an eye on the progress as we just discussed here today. Debbie and Ernie, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pegel shows us where dairy program payments are going in this week's Map It Out.
Producers who enrolled in the Dairy Margarine Coverage Program have been getting more and more checks this year. The program offers payments when the difference between the average of milk prices and feed cost falls below a certain level, up to a margin of $9.50 per hundredweight. This map shows the total DMC payments received by producers in each state. Wisconsin is at the top of the list with nearly $272 million in payments. California is the next closest state with about $140 million in payments. Two other states have more than $100 million in total payments, New York at nearly $117 million and Minnesota at about $102 million. Pennsylvania is just shy of the nine-figure mark at $99 million. According to USDA, almost three-quarters of operations with an established production history are enrolled in the program. Wisconsin has the most enrollment with more than 4,000 farms. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. USDA will release its annual report on hops Wednesday. Be on the lookout for the next episode of our Deep Dive podcast on five farm and food policy drivers Tuesday. One thing that won't be on the agenda, a year-end government funding fix. Instead, we'll be watching for action by a mid-January deadline. You can find the latest on that and all the other farm policy news you need on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.